This is The Book in the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
We're hearing a lot about AI, or artificial intelligence, especially in the last year and a half since ChatGPT went online. On this program, we've discussed several cases where scholars are using AI to help read ancient cuneiform tablets. A year ago, in 2023, we also reported on the Vesuvius Challenge, an invitation thrown out to use AI to move forward the ability to read writing on carbonized scrolls from an ancient library buried by the eruption of Mount Vesuvius. Today, we're welcoming back Brent Seals to find out what happened to that challenge. Brent is the chair of the Department of Computer Science at the University of Kentucky. He got his PhD here at the University of Wisconsin and has been involved in trying to read the unreadable for three decades now. We first talked to you in 2015 when the news broke out about your work using computer tomography to read a carbonized scroll excavated at En Gedi along the Dead Sea, which turned out to be the Book of Leviticus. That's the oldest biblical text outside the Dead Sea Scrolls. That was easier than the Herculaneum Scrolls because at that time the ink was different and it was detected on the Leviticus scroll a little bit easier, but things have changed now.
That's right. The Vesuvius Challenge has helped us really accelerate the work of virtual unwrapping, especially on this really difficult collection from Herculaneum. It really represents the most difficult technical problem in three different aspects. I mean, for one thing, the material is papyrus, which is somewhat different from animal skin. The Levitical scroll was written on animal skin. Another thing is that it's been carbonized, and a complete carbonization sort of changes the characteristics, the material characteristics of the papyrus in a way that makes it incredibly fragile and difficult to image. But yeah, the third thing is that the ink characteristic itself, the chemistry is different from what we experienced with the scroll from En Gedi. It's mainly carbon black, which means that in X-ray, you don't really get a very clear distinction between the ink and the papyrus that it's written on.
So how do you meet that challenge to figure out how to find out where the ink was?
We've been working for a while on that very challenge, carbon ink on carbonized papyrus. What can you do with the imaging modality of tomography to be able to see that? And what we found was that techniques from artificial intelligence were the perfect fit to be able to tease that out of the data that we have.
So there were maybe impressions that the ink made on the papyrus, and you were able to detect that?
No, in fact, the key discovery that we made was that the ink isn't really invisible so much as the evidence of it is not a density-based evidence, but it's a statistical change in the pattern of the papyrus. And that shape-based change is not easily detected with the naked eye, but is something that an artificial intelligence scheme can tease out as a nuanced signal. And so what we really needed to do was make that observation and then figure out a framework where we could train, label, and then see the ink, make it appear.
Was that the framework then that you put online for the Vesuvius Challenge for people to use that?
That's exactly right. What we did is we published the initial results from having proven that this framework would work. And we did that with open fragments so that we could see the results on layers where the ink was clearly visible already. And then we framed that for the Vesuvius Challenge, and we invited contestants to take our position and move forward with it.
And how many people responded to the challenge?
Initially, we saw a response of a few hundred people interested in the first phase of the challenge. But then quickly, as word got out and as the prize pool grew, we saw the contestant pool grow from a few hundred to a few thousand. And that's where we found the critical mass really occurring, a lot of back and forth progress being made, and then ultimately some prizes that we were able to award.
Were these computer science students, or who responded? What type of response?
It's been really interesting to watch the the demographics, you know, of the interested people kind of come together through the Discord channel that really represents the social media part of this community. What we see mainly in the contestants is people with machine learning and computer science experience, because it really is a technical challenge. But there are also folks in the discussion who are papyrologists, who are archaeologists, who have a curiosity and, you know, want to be involved in what's going on, even if they can't compete for the prize.
And what were the prizes?
The prizes we awarded in October were intermediate prizes along the way to the grand prize. We called the prize then the First Letters Prize, and it was to recognize the breakthrough of seeing writing in one of the completely closed scrolls. And we were able to award a $40,000 first prize for the First Letters Prize, and also a second prize. The grand prize has not been awarded. We're here right now near the end of the calendar year, and that is also the deadline for the Vesuvius Challenge, and we expect submissions for the grand prize to be coming in imminently.
Those who've just joined us, we're talking with Brent Seals, professor at the University of Kentucky, who is responsible for the Vesuvius Challenge to try and find people that will help read ancient papyrus scrolls found in a library at Herculaneum, buried by the eruption of Mount Vesuvius. So what is the criteria for awarding the grand prize, and what do people have to do?
We constructed fairly tight constraints around what a prize-winning submission would be. For the First Letters Prize, we were really looking for 8 or 10 letter forms in a small region, because we're really just looking for the first letters that would show that the technical problem could be solved. For the grand prize, we're actually looking for narrative text. So we've asked contestants to show us 4 separate passages, each of which has at least 140 characters, with an error rate of no more than 15%. And we have a technical review that we apply to make sure that the technology is actually working and the results are being derived properly from the data. But we also have a papyrological review where we have language experts who read these ancient materials. They will review each submission for that criterion.
And do you expect to have a lot of submissions?
We really don't know. You know, Gordon, it's been interesting to see the back and forth in the Discord and the conversations leading toward who we think might be submitting, but it's a competitive contest, and there's actually a lot of money at stake. So in the end, we're not sure how many submissions or of what quality the submissions will be. We're just waiting. It's going to be exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've been working on this for a long time. And there are other people who are doing somewhat similar work. And there was one expert who said that he didn't ever expect to be able to read any of the Herculaneum scrolls in his lifetime. But you helped him do that.
Well, yeah, that was my colleague. He was quoted in The New Yorker saying that, my colleague Daniel. And after that, you know, I would be asked when I would give lectures, you know, will you be able to read these things within, you know, my lifetime, your lifetime? And I would always jokingly say, well, how long do you plan to live? You know, how long do I plan to live? We have actually read from within one of these scrolls, and Daniel himself has done so as a papyrus emeritus. And I'm proud of that, and I'm glad that his quote did not come to be, but instead we've been reading the inside, yeah.
So there's 400 scrolls that have been discovered that are unreadable so far, and hopefully your processes can open these up. But there's still some barriers in terms of just the economics and the time it takes to work on these projects.
We have gone after this challenge using the highest level of science and scientific instrumentation. So the images that we've made come from a synchrotron, which is incredibly expensive instrumentation. And it also involves moving the material to a high-energy physics place to be able to collect that data. That really won't scale to the other 400 or 500 scrolls. It's not economically viable, and it's difficult to get the permissions to do that. So it's actually a big challenge to figure out how to take what we know now and to convert it into something that actually can be done in a work-a-day model, where we install something at the library and we collect the data on-site and then systematically do the other 400 or 500. That's probably one of the biggest open challenges today.
But that could happen.
I believe it will happen. I have this strong belief that once we see one or two or a handful of completely new works from the ancient world using this method, people will absolutely demand that we find a way to work forward toward the other 400.
And the actual library in this villa in Herculaneum has apparently not been discovered. These were just kind of stumbled on, right?
The villa is largely unexcavated. And the place where the scrolls were found, the ones that we have, and I mean it was a cache of 800, maybe 1,200 intact scrolls, some of them fragmentary now, so there may be almost 2,000 inventory numbers. But they were almost discovered by accident because the excavation is not complete. There were tunnels that were dug, and what happened to be discovered in those tunnels is what we have.
And these techniques that you're working on could also be applied to the Dead Sea Scroll corpus in terms of fragments that are stuck together and things like that.
There are examples in lots of other collections, including the Dead Sea Scrolls, where we have material stuck together. It's really not practical to do the physical restoration to pull those things apart. Virtual unwrapping could be the perfect thing. And I should also note that the scrolls from Petra were discovered in a fully carbonized state. Mm. And there were a few hundred of them, but most people determined that only a few dozen could actually be opened. There may be a cache of scrolls with the Jordanian Petra collection that could be candidates for this work.
I forgot about that collection. We covered that story many years ago. Well, that's all really exciting. Our guest has been Brent Seals, chair of the Computer Science Department at the University of Kentucky, talking about how to read the unreadable or make the unreadable readable. Would you say that's a better description?
I would say that. I am not the one who reads the language, but I'm trying to make these things visible for the experts who do.
Thank you for being on our program today. We'd like to remind our listeners we have a quarterly magazine, Artifacts, the Biblical Archaeology News magazine, that is also available to help people stay up to date on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. You can find out how to subscribe to Artifacts by going to our website at radioscribe.com. We also have information on our Israel tour coming up in 2024, in November of 2024. You can find more information on that on our website. And we also have breaking news videos from the Israel Antiquities Authority at radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through Biblical Archaeology on The Book and the Spade.
The Book and the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.